January 18, 2022. This is The Better Life. I'm your host, Timothy Lawson. Living a better life means betting on the Super Bowl, and that actually has a couple of different meanings. For those of you that are longtime listeners, maybe some of you are original listeners from day one, you will know that the Better Life podcast was conceptualized out of a Super Bowl. The Eagles-Patriots Super Bowl, I was at a Super Bowl party, I had a bunch of prop bets, everybody thought it was a lot of fun, and I was like, huh. Like, this life is a bit different. Everybody in this room is watching the Super Bowl through the sort of typical assumed lens. I am waiting for Tom Brady's wife to appear on the broadcast more than twice. So that's how the Better Life came to be years ago. Here we are, Bengals, Rams. Rams get it done. The Bengals cover, the under gets there. The under is the bet that I had the most action on, which made it a good day. Prop bets didn't quite get there for me. Prop bets looked good for a while, and then in the last quarter sort of crumbled a little bit. Like, I had some Cooper Kupp alt unders that actually looked like a few of them were gonna get there, but he, of course, has a great drive to bust those, and other props didn't really get there, but it still ended up being a positive experience betting-wise because I did have the Bengals plus four, and I hit the under 50 pretty quickly when it opened and then took it again at 49 shortly before the game. So those both got there. And then I made an in-game bet under 24 for the second half, and that also got there. So the lackluster events of points helped me out a lot there, betting the Super Bowl. Hope everybody did well. With the Super Bowl, as I was telling people that I was in the room with, it was another Super Bowl party where I'm the one with betting action, everybody else is just sort of watching the game. The way I explained it, they're like, oh man, you really bet all these different things on that. Like, I had opening kickoff to not be a touchback. It becomes a touchback, and I groan, and they're like, wait, the game hasn't even started. How have you already lost a bet? You do your due diligence going into the game, right? You go through that exercise of handicapping, figuring out which bets you like, etc. And once that's done, once all the bets are in the account, yeah, you want them all to do well, but at that point, for the Super Bowl especially, for me, it just becomes entertainment at that point, right? It's just an added level of entertainment. I didn't make any bets purely for entertainment, right? Like I said, all the bets I made were, you know, I bet them assuming or believing that I was getting the best of it or I was on the right side. But as soon as kickoff happens, now, you know, the extra layer of entertainment is really what I'm there for. So another Super Bowl passed. Moving on to I don't know if we'll see baseball. I know not everybody's into soccer, but soccer, a handful of summer leagues are coming around the corner that I enjoy betting. The European leagues are reaching into their final months, so that sport has plenty going for it. And of course, golf and tennis, for those who enjoy it, starting to pick up as well. This week, we're going to do a better viewing episode. If you've been keeping track at home, you've been picking up on that my plans in life, both in personally and in the better life, have sort of been stalled and disjointed a little bit because of a job transition that I've been in. And so the original plan was for Better Viewing to be put into its own feed and exclusively in that feed at this point. We're sort of delaying that process by one episode. So this week is going to be a Better Viewing episode. Next time Mark and I do this, it will be in its own feed. That feed is actually live in Apple Podcasts. You can find it, Better Viewing with Tim Lawson and Mark Duvall. Waiting for it to syndicate to the sort of third-party podcast spots, and then I need to finish submitting it to places like Spotify and Stitcher. So almost all the way there. This will, in fact, be the last time that Better Viewing hits the main feed in for the Better Life. So if you enjoy these episodes, you want to keep listening to them, Better Viewing, if you're an Apple Podcasts, is there. If you listen elsewhere, hold tight. It'll be there soon. But that's where Better Viewing will take place. And we'll probably be around once a month again. you know, we'll have the sort of the flexibility to Mark and I are still trying to figure out what that looks like, but that's more or less, I think what we're going to see is roughly once a month still. And yeah, so we cover episodes 5 and 6 from HBO's show Luck that came out almost a decade ago on horse racing. Enjoy. Okay, as we're waiting for people to get in here, let's talk about Biloxi, Mississippi. I am looking forward to Biloxi. It is a little over, well, it was about 6 weeks away, I think, is our trip down to Biloxi. Sounds like you're still undetermined based off of Dr. Mike's. No, I'm going.
In fact, okay. I was talking to the wife today and she was saying, hey, when are you going to Biloxi? She was trying to make plans. So, yeah, so I'm going. And yeah, if Dr. Mike joins me, well, whether he joins me or not, we'll probably rent a car, stop by Harrah's New Orleans on the way just to, you know, check it out. I've never been there. He hasn't been in years. And then we'll continue on. And of course, we're staying at Harrah's in Biloxi because, okay. You know, yeah.
Because you're still built into that Caesars ecosystem.
The whole Caesars. And we're not Caesars, you know, shills or proponents. That's just where we get all our comps. So,
yeah. Yep. Since it's right there in your backyard, I can't imagine that really ever changes for you.
Huh? No, it's the only casino close to us that has comps that we can use elsewhere. All the rest of the casinos close to us are one-offs. They're you know, so.
And I imagine it's not San Manuel anymore. What's it called?
Yamava. Yeah.
Yamava. I can't imagine their relationship with the Palms does anything for you.
No, first of all, it's not that close to us. And right now they don't have craps. So, Mike's brother goes there all the time because he lives relatively close to there. But yeah, there's no incentive for us to go. It's too far. Yeah.
Yeah. Bogan, he's booked his room at the Nugget. I'm going to be at Beau Rivage. You'll be at Harrah's. What's really funny about this is, I mean, Biloxi just kind of happens this way because sort of on what you're just talking, like I'm built into the MGM ecosystem, right? So it's easy for me to get a spot at Beau. You're at Harrah's, people depending on where they're playing. I was recently talking to Eric and he was mentioning that he's noticed that Golden Nugget doesn't, like playing at one Golden Nugget doesn't impact offers at another Golden Nugget on his experience, or at least from what he's observed. Other people, I don't know if Bogan has any more insight to that, but I thought that was interesting. We're so used to being able to play at a local casino and have a benefit travel elsewhere. Sounds like Golden Nugget might not be that easy for people that for some reason want to go to those properties.
And now understand, and sorry to cut you off. And please continue with your thought, but I was just thinking Beau Rivage. And so Biloxi's kind of broken up into like little segments, right? And like three. Okay. And Beau Rivage is in one. I assume Harrah's is in a different one.
So when you're coming in, I think if I remember right, the main drive coming into Biloxi is boom right there. Is Beau Rivage and Hard Rock are right next to each other. They're neighbors.
Okay.
Just down the road from them, you have the Harrah's Palace Gold Nugget sort of grouping. And then sort of on the other side of Biloxi, maybe a 10, 12 minute drive away, you have Scarlet Pearl, Boomtown, IP sort of they're not necessarily close together like those other two clusters are, but they're sort of in their own little region of Biloxi.
Okay.
So it's I think Rob did a great job of organizing each night as a meetup at a casino in a different sort of area of Biloxi. So looking forward to it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome everybody. Thank you for being here. Some administrative notes, Mark, before we move on. If people saw on Twitter, the Better Viewing RSS feed has been finally approved and is published in Apple Podcasts. So you can actually find the Better Viewing podcast feed in Apple Podcasts. I'm still waiting for it to syndicate at sort of the smaller, like the Pocket Casts and Google Podcasts of the world. And then I'm still waiting for the Spotify and I think Stitcher wants to approve.
But there's specific ones there you have to kind of manually do. Other ones they draw from Apple Podcasts. So it should be automatic. Good.
Yep. So both with the hectic life that I've had, not being able to properly, I'm sort of catching up, and with sort of the delay, I don't want just people with Apple Podcasts to be able to find this. So this episode will be in the Better Life main feed and in the Better Viewing feed. then the next show we do, by then it should be everywhere it needs to be, and Better Viewing will exclusively be its own show.
Good. Okay.
Good. Very good. We are here to talk about Luck, episodes 5 and 6. I was I found myself being just sort of drawn into these episodes. I don't know. It was more so than just being entertained. I was just sort of like sort of into the story, I guess, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. I mean, we've watched enough episodes now that we're past the stage where we're trying to figure these characters out. We have a pretty good understanding of what they're all about. So now we can kind of concentrate more on the storytelling.
Yep.
So yeah, I know what you mean. I agree.
Okay. Luck, episode 5. Again, this is on HBO for those of you that maybe haven't seen it yet and want to catch up. It's so far halfway through the season now. I guess we're getting just on the other side of the halfway through the season. It's a good show, and I recommend that if you're interested in what we're talking about here, so I would recommend watching it. It's turning into an entertaining series.
Yeah, great.
Chester is the character's name. Chester's horse is listed to run, but Escalante said that the horse isn't so Chester's right-hand man sees that the horse is listed to run, their horse that they own. Escalante says, that the horse is listed to run as a favor to the track because they need a certain amount of horses to have the race go. There's a 90% chance that the horse ends up getting scratched, and there's confusion on the legitimacy of that. And I have to admit, I was a little confused, and I don't know if you were able to pick when Escalante is trying, like, it made sense to me, I'm just doing the track a favor, listing the horse so they can get the race to go. The horse will then, like, good chance the horse just gets scratched. But I wasn't sure, like, why the horse couldn't be scratched. Like he said, it's a 90% chance horse gets scratched. I didn't quite understand like what that 10% chance was, like what would happen. Does that make sense?
Well, I think Escalante was lying. I think he entered the horse and was entering it with this young jockey, Leon, with the idea that the odds would be relatively long. He could bet on him and win a lot of money.
Okay.
And so I think he was lying when he was saying, "Oh, I'm doing it as a favor and he's going to be scratched." So once you are convinced that he's lying, then the 90 and 10 really don't make any sense anymore.
Gotcha.
And then Chester, Ace, his nickname, and his chauffeur, they come to show up, and Ace says, "No, he suspects that Escalante is lying." He says, "No, you're going to put the best jockey you can on this horse. And that's all there is to it." And there's some back and forth and some bluffing going on and who's going to call whose bluff. And Escalante does end up giving Ace a list of the best jockeys in his opinion. And so they get supposedly the best jockey on the horse. So, yeah, I think it was all lying on Escalante's part. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Chester even calls him out when they meet in the stables. "I'm trying to figure out if you're a gambler or a trainer."
Yeah, right.
Which I thought was, I was like, why can't he be both?
Well, that's Escalante said that too, basically. Yeah. He was, you know, kind of upfront. Yeah. Well, yeah. So,
look, if you know your horse is good, why not make some money off of him?
Exactly. Yep.
We learned that the security guard that we met at the beginning of the series, who was kind of a loan shark to Jerry, we learned that he actually gets fired from the track because the track learns that he has been loan sharking around the track. He tells a story about how he ran out to Laughlin and had a wild time that led to him, his words, shitting in the street. Yeah. I only chuckle. I mean, it was a sad story. I don't want to laugh at someone's hardships, but like anytime someone goes to any sort of gambling town and it ends in that sort of way, it's hard to not chuckle.
And then they were doing it for laughs because so Jerry actually takes Cagle to get a meal. And Cagle, when he's telling the story, he said, "I ended up in Laughlin, Nevada." And Jerry says, "Jesus." So, you know, they're doing it for laughs. Like, oh, my God, Laughlin, Laughlin. Poor bastard.
Have you been to Laughlin?
Yeah, it's been a while, but I've been a couple times. Uh-huh.
I've talked to a couple people recently that said that Laughlin is worth a day or two. When you've gone to Vegas enough times where you've like if you know the allure of Vegas is there, but you're okay with breaking away, saying if you have a long enough trip, go to Laughlin for a day or two. Would you agree with that?
Hey, if you're a gambler, Laughlin is great. you know, people go to Las Vegas for a lot of different reasons. Well, those reasons aren't all in Laughlin. You know, it's not, it's certainly an older crowd, you know, not nightclubs. Yeah, the restaurants aren't as good. There's just not as many attractions, but there's still the gambling there. And it's probably a better option for gamblers. You're probably going to get more for your money gambling there too. Lower limits, maybe some, you know, better rules. So I would recommend it to gamblers, specifically to gamblers. Yeah. Okay. Now, the thing is, though, like if I'm going, I'm probably going to go to Vegas anyway because it takes me just as long to get to Vegas as it does to Laughlin. And Vegas still has more options. So, yeah, I guess it's worth it. If you've never been, if you want to say you've been, go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. He ends up, so he asks Jerry for a loan, and Jerry ends up giving him $1,000. And so he asked for Jerry for a loan on the retail VIG, which I imagine, I didn't know if that it implied like a standard VIG of like, or if that was like, I'll even pay you sort of the higher priced VIG that one would put out on the streets. What was your interpretation
of that?
That's
what I got too, is, you know, hey, what are the loan sharks offering, you know, right now? What's their VIG?
Yeah. Got it.
And it's interesting because he specifically said anything up to 10 would be great. And he's obviously saying, if you could loan me anything up to $10,000, that would be great. He actually gave him a figure, and Jerry gave him $1,000.
Yeah, so. But Jerry gives it to him with no VIG.
No VIG.
And I thought it was a kind of a class move, and he's maybe showing a little grace to a guy who once loaned him money time and time again. So,
and I think Jerry's smart enough that, you know, he realizes he may never see that $1,000 again. So
Marcus insults Jerry for having a diary. I wrote this down. Do you journal, Mark? Are you a journaler?
No, not really. I've written down my trips to Vegas, but no, beyond that, no.
I have been, you know, journaling is sort of, you know, in like the mental health sphere or the productivity sphere. A lot of people recommend journaling for a number of benefits. I've tried it. I enjoy it. I am not consistent with it. I can't.
That's the thing, right? Yeah. I would talk myself out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I just recently actually pulled up my journal to write something in, and I looked at my last entry, and it was like from like 5 months ago. And I was like, this habit's going well.
Yeah.
Marcus makes it clear that he like read it, which I thought was, goodness, what an invasion of privacy. I think we all learn from being kids that like diaries and journals and personal notes are ones that, you know, there's an expected level of privacy there, I think. So he intruded there and calls him out on losing a ton to his nemesis at the poker table. Marcus commenting on Jerry says, urinating money at the poker parlor.
Yeah, good line. Yeah.
Which was a funny line.
Kevin Dunn is so great in this show. He's kind of the standout. You know, he's a funny character. You know, you feel sorry for him. Also, he plays it so perfectly. He seems to have all the best lines. You know, snarky, but you know, again, you feel sorry for him. Yeah, I think he's great in this show.
Yeah,
we do find out too for the first time in this episode why he's in a wheelchair. It turns out when he was 11 years old, he fell out of a tree. So we know that now. It was something that happened in his childhood.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is the first time we got that backstory. Yeah. That's right. So he gives him the list of the best jockeys, and then he gives him a second list of the best white jockeys.
Yeah.
With that like sort of implied,
you're a racist. Maybe you'd prefer this list. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I thought that was no, Chester's like, I want the best. Like, I don't. Yeah. So that's who he goes after. Yeah. And then he gives Escalante, well, they give Escalante 5,000 to sort of compensate the young jockey who's getting bumped off the ride.
Right. And that $5,000, it seems like it never really gets into the jockey's hands because it's given, Escalante gives it to his agent, Joey, and it looks like Joey pretty much hangs on to it, even though he flashes it to Leon. So I don't know. Yeah. It's hard to say how much Leon actually got out of that.
Well, okay, so let's talk about this because the part of the storyline that I didn't take notes on that we can actually talk about here because of I didn't really put these two things together until you just made that comment. So throughout this episode, and then briefly in the other in the next episode, we see Joey, who's the jockey agent played by Richard Kind. We see him like desperately trying to get a hold of, I think, either an ex-wife or at least an ex-girlfriend.
So it seems like an ex-wife.
Yeah. And he's desperately trying to call her. You can tell he's in a bad spot in that you can tell by his behavior. It's this guy who clearly isn't like desired by this woman anymore, who's trying to figure out a way to like somehow slip back into some sort of favor with her. He mentions how it was a nice day at the track and he's got a couple $100 he'd like to like pass along, whatever. And I think maybe the implication is that he's holding on to that money as more of that sort of emphasis, or like trying to use that in, because he says that it was a nice day at the track, I got a couple $100 and he makes that statement after he's gotten that money, right? He does flash it at that young jockey, but we don't see him share it ever. And I would like to think that if the show's implying that he is giving the kids some of the money, that he would have done so. So I think they're implying that he kept it. Maybe it was because of the stress he had with his former relationship.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. He's thinking maybe this money will help me get back with her. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What's funny is, so the scene that we're talking about takes place in a bar. The old jockey, who's actually a real jockey, what's his name again?
Gary Stevens is the Gary actual Stevens. Guy's name. Yeah, and plays a jockey named Ronnie. Yeah,
that's it, Ronnie. Ronnie is playing pool by himself, and he's hearing this conversation, or I guess he's participating in it, really. And he actually called, like, the Joey tries to pass off this $5,000 as sort of like a, but he calls it a retainer.
Yeah.
And Ronnie quickly is like, yeah, it sounds more like I can't remember what he calls it, but like, it sounds like they're paying you for getting bumped off the ride.
Yeah. I can't remember his exact words either, but yeah, he knows what it is. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's when Leon understands what it is too. Yeah.
Yep. The guys, and by the guys, I mean our little ragtag group of gamblers, they have t-shirts made for their horse. It's called Foray Stables. I didn't get the reference. Is that Escalante's barn? Is it called Foray Stables?
You know what? I didn't even think
the whole
it.
Episode. I was trying to wait for another reference to Foray, but I only ever saw it in, and I wouldn't have caught it in the former
episode. I didn't even think
there.
About it. No.
Chester then meets the new jockey to ride his horse. He asks to watch the race with Escalante. He wants to watch the race. Escalante offers him his box. He's like, "No, I prefer it if you watched it with us."
Yeah.
So they all sit in the box. He mentions at 360. So he's with a woman that I think he's sort of taking a liking to, and he has helped fund some effort she's doing with rescuing racehorses or something.
Yeah,
and
it's a program where inmates,
right,
would help with rehabilitate racehorses, or something to that effect. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, charity.
He ends up contributing $367,000. She asks him why 367, and he says it's his lucky number. And I wasn't sure if that's setting something up or if that was a callback that I missed.
If it was a callback, I missed it. Yeah, I figured it's something that's coming up. And what did she ask for? Like $250,000, something like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, right. So he gave her more, and that's supposedly it's his lucky number. Yeah.
Okay. And then the race is underway. I couldn't tell. One of the horses loses a shoe, and I couldn't tell if it was their horse or a horse in front of them. But the shoe ends up hitting their horse in the hind leg, and the horse is bleeding. And Mark, I was semi-shielding the TV because I was scared that something like brutal was about to happen to the horse.
Yeah, yeah. You know, now that you mention it, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, their horse lost the shoe. But it makes more sense that it was a horse ahead that lost the shoe and then it cut him. Yeah. And it was a very realistic looking cut. I'm sure it was CGI, but it was very realistic, and the horse doesn't tumble or anything, right? There's not, I know what you mean, you're expecting, okay, is his leg gonna buckle, what's gonna happen?
Yeah,
but instead it's just kind of gory, you know, scraped away skin, that kind of thing. Yeah,
I was like watching, I had like the hand up like over the horse, so I could see the whole TV except for the horse, because like if I hear it, I'll know what happened and I don't have to see it.
Yeah, but, right, yeah, sure.
Yeah, but they, I mean, the reputation that they have based off of what happened and then what we saw in the first episode with the horse actually getting hurt. Yeah. All that not was, or the reputation notwithstanding, I think they did one thing that opening episode did was it created that tension in this. Because mm-hmm. if that first episode doesn't include that horse breaking its leg, I don't know if I get as worried in this scene.
Yeah, right? that makes sense. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But because that's happened, now I'm like anytime the horse isn't perfect, I'm like, oh no. And yeah. So, you know, it's unfortunate that the series got the reputation that it did based off of reality. But going back to that moment in time, from a storytelling aspect, I thought that was actually kind of well done, because now they're making those moments even more dramatic. You know, I'm really enjoying the cinematography done in the racing. They're getting some really cool angles of in front of the horses, out of the gates, all this sort of stuff. But there's only so much drama other than the lead, right? Like, other than the horse positioning, there's only really so much drama they can really build into a horse or into a race that they're trying to stretch for a handful of minutes. And a horse's well-being is one way to create a little more of that drama. Yeah,
definitely. And I'll repeat what I've said on our previous episodes. You know, the horse racing footage, the action is fantastic on this show. It's like you're watching a movie in a theater. It really is tremendous. And of course, that's underscored by, again, you know, the whole reality of, you know, why the show got canceled. But yeah, it just looks fantastic. Yeah,
agreed. The horse wins. Everybody's excited. We're implied the horse is going to be okay, I think, is sort of what we're in the end. It's sort of, we don't really know the longevity of the horse or its capabilities, but based off of sort of what Escalante says and what the doctor says, we're led to believe that the horse should recover from the injury at least. But the horse's racing ability, or how good it may be, to be determined still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep. And that's actually all I have for episode 5. Do you have anything else?
You know, the only other thing is kind of just some interesting things that came up. At one point, I can't remember which character, I think it might be Joey, refers to Leon as a bug, uses the slang term bug. And I actually went to look this up. Bug or bug boy means an apprentice jockey. And the term is even used in the second episode that we're going to talk about here. So we're just learning something. I don't know a lot of horse racing slang, so that was one that kind of caught my ear. I think that's it. Other than, you know, you were talking about the security guard that lost his job. And gosh, everything, you know, the thing about these two episodes is now that we've been introduced to this world, we're comfortable in this world, they're starting to introduce a lot of storylines, a lot of things. And, you know, I'm just worried, oh, shoot, how many are going to be resolved here in this first season? Because unfortunately,
that's a good point.
When the season ended, the showrunners, the people behind the show, they'd been greenlit for a second season. They thought they were coming back. It wasn't until, after that they found out that they weren't. So there might be a lot of loose ends here. There's certainly a lot more storylines that are you know, coming up in these two episodes. So,
yeah.
And I'm prepared to be left hanging.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. I hadn't really thought about that. Yeah, because, you know, looking at it in, you know, 10 years later, you know, it, we know it's a wrapped show.
Yeah.
Or not wrapped, but, you know, it's a finite.
It's not coming back. I don't think there's a big push to bring back Locke on HBO.
Right. Episode 6. Chester is meeting with his parole officer and sees a photo of Miles Davis and mentions that he saw Miles at the plaza. Now, did you catch that? He says,
not the Plaza Las Vegas.
Okay, yeah. That's what I was wondering. I was like, I was trying to place this. I was like,
no,
that's not a Vegas reference, right?
No,
it's
got to
be a small town. Yeah, or small.
I mean, I don't know a lot about, you know, Miles Davis, but no, yeah, right. Plaza wasn't built till like 1970, so no.
Right. That's right. Okay. Yeah.
One thing, since we're on that scene, I like it because, yeah, he's talking to his parole officer, and the parole officer is trying to find out why he wants to basically buy the racetrack and maybe turn it into a casino. And he's wondering, you know, is some of it revenge for the people that sent him to prison? And Ace, he kind of deflects the conversation, but I think it's a funny line. He says to his parole officer, "Did you ever look a horse in the eye?" And the parole officer says, "Never. Never near a horse, and I have a lifetime ambition to keep it that way." And I think that's an interesting line because, you know, people who aren't around horses, and I include myself in that, when you are not used to being around horses, they're imposing animals, right?
They are
big, and, you know, people, it's sort of like people and dogs too. I know you're a dog lover. I'm a dog lover. So we've been about dogs all our lives, but there are people who, you know, if there's a dog, it's like, right. You know, and I understand that based on, you know, that kind of same with horses, right? A horse isn't going to attack you, right? Yeah. You can get hurt by a horse. I'm not saying you can't, but, you know, they're big, and I can understand people, you know, kind of having a fear of horses.
Yeah, I try to be mindful of the fact that not everybody loves dogs while I'm out with my dog.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, good for you. Yeah. That's important as an owner. You can't assume, you know, it's like I hate dog owners who don't have their dog on a leash and they say, oh, he's fine. You know, he's good with people. He, you know, he won't bite. That doesn't matter, right? You don't know how people, you know, feel about dogs. So, yeah.
We were walking through a park in Ohio one time, and this guy was walking through the city park with two German shepherds off leash.
Yeah.
And I was like, you have no idea how much like anxiety you might be creating with everybody. I'm sure they seem like very sweet dogs.
Yeah.
But those are big German shepherds. And you don't even have to even necessarily be scared of dogs to be uneasy about that situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So at the beginning of it, so the scene in the parole officer's office reminded me of just how much I'm struggling with Chester's story. Like, as he's sitting there and they're having this discussion, I found some of the lines interesting and I thought it was well written, but like I wasn't like waiting for information or waiting for, I will be okay with not being having any resolution on his story.
I think we talked about it before too. It's for being the lead supposedly on the show. In a way he's the least compelling character. So yeah.
Yep. But as he starts to take to this horse, I'm starting to enjoy that a little bit more.
Yeah, he's really falling in love with this horse for sure. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so the guys are excited that their horse is running in the race of the day. And one guy asks about a strategy, and another suggests that they run real fast, turn left, and run even faster. And I was like, yeah. That's it. That's racing in a nutshell. Yep.
That's it. Yep.
That's how it works. there's an earthquake. The horses freak out. Trainers are running to check on their horses. Joey is in his bathroom at home and holding a gun to his temple. You know, it's clear.
I think he actually had it in his mouth. Didn't he?
It
makes a difference. The point is he's thinking about killing himself.
Right.
Yeah.
The scene starts with it's in his mouth, and then he puts it to his temple, and then he starts to lower it. And then as he's lowering it, it shakes. Anyways.
The earthquake hits. Yeah.
It's clear he's contemplating suicide, and the earthquake hits as he's sort of lowering this gun and sort of hopefully choosing the better, ends up discharging the weapon. And it shows the bullet sort of ricochet a couple times and then hit his cheek. Yep. And we see him in the hospital. Joey has like this really, I'm not saying it's a lot of people who survive an experience like that usually do have some sort of change of heart, different view on life, whatever. Right. But like, it was really interesting the way that they approached it. Like, he holds up his shirt and he like says like, I am Joey. And he starts reading everything on the tag of his shirt in like a really like optimistic way, almost as if like he's experiencing the tag of his shirt. Like, and,
well,
what was your takeaway? Well, yeah. So how
my takeaway from that was he realized he wasn't stuttering. That was what he was doing when he was saying all those things is I am Joey. And he's just reading it. And he's finding that he's not stuttering. So this botched suicide, they're making it like a turning point for him. And one way that's manifesting itself is he's not stuttering anymore.
You know what? I completely missed it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a great point. It didn't even dawn on me that he wasn't stuttering. That's a great point.
Yeah.
All right.
So
there you go.
That's what it is. Yeah.
That's why you're here, Mark. They show Chester in the stable who he's sort of looking after he's really taken to this horse. I mean, in the last episode where the horse was hurt, he like stays with the horse overnight, and the horse like sort of nuzzles him a little bit, and that he clearly sort of connects with the horse sort of on that. And then in this, he's like just he's almost not even paying attention to his chauffeur or Escalante because he's so distracted by how much he likes his horse. This is the part of his character that I'm having fun watching. There's a handful of scenes that sort of advance this storyline of Chester attempting to purchase a racetrack and possibly build a casino. Right. I'm not going to go over them because I just don't think this storyline's all that compelling.
It's not all that compelling, but I do want to touch on one thing.
Okay,
so he's got his apprentice or whatever you want to call him, the guy that he's kind of grooming to be like himself. What's his name? Nathan? Yeah, Nathan. And he sends Nathan to talk to basically his Ace's rivals. And one thing, and they kind of supposedly turn Nathan to start working for them. But he goes back to Ace and says, "No, I'm still working for you." There's like double crossing, triple crossing. But anyway, one of the points that came up in the discussion was these guys were worried because they thought that Ace had the Indian gaming, the Indian gaming lobby in his pocket, and that's why he would be able to open slot machines at this casino that he would start at the racetrack. Now, a couple of things. We find out at the end of the show that he probably doesn't have the Indian gaming lobby in his pocket. But I was thinking about it, and it sort of applies to what's going on right now. There's no way the Indian gaming lobby would allow slot machines to go into any place other than their own casinos. They are fighting so hard to have exclusive rights to sports betting, and that's why we don't have it yet. There's this fight going on, and a lot of it is, the tribal casinos. They want, the whole pie. So it's one of those storylines that, okay, within the reality of the show, that's what's happening. But no Indian gaming lobby would allow slot machines to go in anywhere else. Anyway, that kind of caught my eye. I thought I'd bring that up. So,
is TVG live in California?
Yeah. Yeah.
It is.
TVG, as far as I know, is allowed in all 50 states.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Right.
I might be wrong. It might be illegal in Utah or Hawaii. I don't know.
Right.
That's been live here for a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and what Tim's talking about is online horse betting, basically.
Right.
You can do that. That's not even the only app.
Right.
I think Twin Spires is another one. But yeah, that's been legal and online for some time. Yeah.
And then that's there's no like the Indian gaming lobby or whatever has no like that's been
I don't think they care. Right? It used to be a lot of the tribal casinos would even have horse betting areas, and a lot of those have kind of fizzled out. I just don't think they're that interested. Yeah.
Do you use the app? So I've been, so
not anymore. I pretty much stopped horse betting, unless I'm actually at the track. No, we don't do that anymore.
Bogan saying that they have a TVG channel in South Carolina, but
bet.
They can't
okay.
bet.
All right. So, well, then I stand corrected. Let me put it another way. It may not be legal in all 50 states, but it's legal in more states than sports betting is legal right now.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been using FanDuel Racing app, which I think is actually, I think they're actually tied to TVG. Like I think the Facebook is the FanDuel is the skin, but I think they're getting all of their information and such from TVG, I think.
And I'm glad Bogan mentioned this because now this is coming back to me. I don't think you can bet TVG in Nevada, for example.
Oh,
yeah. Right. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's right. The Chester attempting to purchase a racetrack, possibly build a casino. We're back at the racetrack, and our gamblers are rattling off different types of bets that they want their buddy who's going to go put in all these bets for them.
Right.
I tried to sort of keep up with the first one, and as soon as it was clear they were all putting in bets, I just gave up. I was like, never mind. I'm not going to.
I gave up too, because I'm thinking, all right, the point of this scene, the point of this exchange, is that it's all this jargon. It's not even like, it needs to necessarily make sense. I'm sure it did. They did their homework on this show. But the whole point of the machine, of the scene, is they're just rattling it off. And, maybe it's kind of funny. I will say this, and this makes absolutely no sense in this scene, is they're all telling Renzo, who's easily the most clueless of the four of them, what they want, and they're having him go make the bets. Makes absolutely no sense. Luckily, it did not become a plot point,
because
then it's lazy writing, right? If, he messed it up.
Right.
But so at least I give the writers that much credit. But yeah, they shouldn't be letting Renzo make the bets.
Yeah. But it was, yeah, it was fun to hear, like I said, all that jargon being just rattled off. And everybody sort of has their own, their own style or whatever. And then one thing I liked is Marcus gets mad that one of them kind of copied his bet, and he's mad because if it wins now, it reduces the split, right?
Like right. Paramutual.
That's so Paramutual is both one of my favorites and one of my most frustrating parts of horse racing. I like it because I can casually bet on horses and not have to worry about like watching the lines, right? Or, you know, this horse opened 10 to 1, he's down to 4 to 1. I'm not getting the best of the number. Oh, well. Like, you know, and so, but at the same time, it is always frustrating when I take that 10 to 1 and then he runs at 3 to 1 and I'm like,
You know, it's interesting, isn't it? Because it's kind of the opposite of most sports betting. You know, the really good sports bettors, they're going to try to find these lines early on that are not correct and make the bets before they move. In horse racing, it's almost the opposite. It's like you got to wait till close to post time to see where the odds are at.
Yeah.
To see if it's a good bet or not. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Unless you're, you know, betting so much that you're actually moving the odds. That's a whole different thing. But yeah.
Right. So the race goes off and their horse runs really well and ends up winning, but there's an inquiry on the race. Before we get into what I didn't catch exactly what happened. So there's a moment in the race where he's passing another horse and it's clear something happens. There's either contact or whatever. I couldn't quite pick up on it, but they make it obvious sort of right after the race that Jerry, even before the track announces that there is an inquiry, knows that there's going to be an issue.
So just to fill in some blanks here too, the jockey in this case is Leon, the same jockey that got pulled from Ace's horse the day before, or in the episode before, I should say. And you're not sure what's really going through his mind. They have a lot of close-ups of him as he's about to enter the gate and as he's racing, and you're not sure if he's planning to do something, if his mind is elsewhere. It's not real clear. But to me, what it looks like is that he deliberately bumps into the other horse. Certainly the jockey on the other horse even says something at the time, like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah.
So it looks to me like it's basically a nudge or some crowding or something, some contact that wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. There's no change to the official result. The inquiry comes in with the official result being upheld, and the three gentlemen that are discussing it, their last point was the horse was going backwards, sort of stating that the horse that he bumped into was not competing, already starting to fade, and that this didn't impact the result for that particular horse,
right?
I liked that they made it like it was clear that there was an issue and that it was legitimate with everybody being concerned, but there was sort of a practical reason as to why it went the way the decision went that it did.
Yeah, and it, you know, it adds to Leon's problem as far as his character goes and what he's going to, you know, go through the next three episodes. We'll have to see, because he's been having trouble keeping the weight off. You know, he passed out once when he was coming out of the sauna. Now he's got this emotional thing that he's working with where he was pulled from the horse, and then this. So, you know, obviously that's going to be part of the storytelling moving forward.
We've mentioned this before, sort of the insights to the challenges of being a jockey is that they're doing very well on sort of telling that story.
Yeah. It's I don't want to say it's a thankless job, but I think a lot of people they think, oh, they get up on the horse and they ride the horse and that's it. And there's way more to it. And it's a very hard job.
So something, and this makes perfect sense, but it was one of those things that you don't realize until it's obvious. I didn't realize how many races a jockey might do in a day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, as I'm placing my bets on FanDuel Racing, you know, Gulfstream Park is a track that I found myself betting. So on A little plug for, I guess, for FanDuel Racing, and I'm sure there's plenty of other racing apps that do this. I think TVG, this may actually be a TVG promo that extends to FanDuel Racing because they're connected, but they have on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they have win bet insurance, right? So if you place a win bet, depending on the amount of horses in the race, if your horse comes in second or third, if it's a big field, you get your win bet refunded to you up to It's only $5, right?
But TVG, when we used to bet on it, we took advantage of that a lot, and that is absolutely the reason we were able to cash out ahead on that app. It's a great it's specific races you got to watch out for them. But like you said, you bet to win. If you win, you win it. And if it comes in second or third, you get your money back. Yeah, that's a great promotion they have. Yep.
Gulfstream Park is one of the tracks that almost, I think, at least once or twice over the weekend will be a part of this. And I've noticed a jockey's name that is always in every race. I'm like, I'll go to the next race and notice, Luis Saez is on, this horse. And one day I realized, holy smokes, this is race five, and he's been in every, up until just recently, my horse betting, horse racing experience has just been the Kentucky Derby, that one race even.
Yeah, and you're thinking, they ride one race a day, right? That's what you're thinking, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, when you actually go to the track, you get the racing form, you get the program, that kind of thing. You realize looking through, these are the same guys. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Carl Schlegel's in the house. Carl, I believe you, I've lost a wager to you. Dr. Mike went under 75.5% on the latest episode of You Can Bet on That on his probability for Biloxi. I believe I took the over 75.5. I believe we had a charity bet on something, but I'm just going to assume it's true. So Carl, tell me where to send my charity bet to, because I'm pretty sure I lost that bet. So here's the thing.
Dr. Mike said 50% on our last.
Man, and he's going to come back next week in our next episode and say 80%.
He's better.
It's just going to be a bad beat. It's going to be a bad beat. And going back to the jockeys, and there's bad blood in the locker room, right? I mean, that the jockey that was on that horse, furious, runs up to Leon and sort of calls him out on it. Again, to not something I really hadn't thought of. I don't think about jockeys congregating, right? Like, I think because I see the jockey horse trainer relationship in, like, when you're at the track, that's all you see. You don't think about where they retire to in between races or anything. So, it makes sense that they're athletes. They have a locker room.
Yeah, they're all together.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And so I was like, oh man, like there must be some pretty tense, on a situation like that, where that little nudge, like I can't imagine you just let that go.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And this is a TV show, so they pump up the drama quite a bit, but I'm sure it can be very uncomfortable emotionally when you're in the locker room, maybe you've done something you shouldn't have.
The next day we're back at the track, and Walter, who's played by Nick Nolte, has his horse running. And this story arc is one. So to your point on closing loops, the Nick Nolte horse is the storyline I want to know more about, and that I'm afraid it's not going to deliver before the end of the season.
It's an interesting storyline because it's almost completely separate from all the other storylines.
Yep.
Yeah, there's maybe some intertwining there, but for the most part, it's all on its own, right? And in this episode, there were some new elements introduced, being that the stud fee that he thought was already taken care of, and some fees for the stable fees and that kind of thing. He thought they were taken care of by, I think they say, the colonel. We're not exactly sure who he is, but sounds like maybe the colonel has passed away, and now this son-in-law is coming and saying, no, you owe stud fees and you owe stable fees. And then it turns out the horse is pretty fast, and this son-in-law shows up at the end kind of claiming, hey, how does my horse doing? So, yeah, there's a lot going on there, and you're right. I don't know if it's going to get resolved or not.
The horse runs with, I forgot to put down her name.
Rosie, I think is her name.
Yeah, Rosie. Yep, Rosie. We've only seen this horse race with Rosie as the jockey. So Walter has entrusted this jockey with his horse, and he gives her the instructions, just keep him stable, just let him win his race, right? Like, yeah, let him run.
Right.
And coming around the final turn, going into the final stretch, she pulls out a whip and hits and whips the horse, and the horse takes off like a rocket. Yeah. And the second that whip hits the horse, Walter is furious. Yep. And this horse tears down this back the final stretch, wins by 10 lengths, and
sets a track record.
Yep, sets the track record. A guy in the media booth, I think it was, even makes a comment. He was on the phone with someone and said, "You just missed the next Man of War."
Yeah.
With Man of War, of course, a historic racing horse. So it's clear that this horse is significant. I couldn't tell. So he when he goes and talks to her, both like he's angry, like after the race, he grabs her whip and throws it in the trash. He makes it clear he's angry that she did this. They even talk later at the stable, sort of by themselves. And I can't tell if he's upset that now the potential of this horse has been revealed to everybody, and that makes this more, or if he feels like this has disrupted the training process, and that somehow having his horse open up like it did in this race is going to somehow, you know, disrupt, you know, what he needs his horse to do in a future race. What was your take?
Yeah, no, okay. I think a little bit of both. Yeah, I think you hit it. Yeah, that was what first occurred to me when he was angry, was, oh, he knows this horse is good. He doesn't want everyone to know how good this horse is now. Right. Yep. He wants that further down the road. But then he says something, I'm paraphrasing here, to the jockey later, something like, you need to tell the horse what to do for a given race.
Right.
That's kind of the way that he phrases it. And clearly in this race, he was going to win. The horse was going to win, and there was no reason to whip him at the end. And yeah, that gets down to the training, right? Is the horse going to be confused by this now, or, you know, expect that? Or so, yeah, I think it was a little bit of both.
Okay, that's all I had for episode 6.
All right, well, let me go through some notes here too, while we kind of collect ourselves too. I don't want this to kind of spin out of control here. So a couple interesting things. I heard some peacocks in the background.
Yes.
This is up at Santa Anita. Did you hear those? Yeah.
Yes, so, I did. And I was like, I should write that down. I was like, wait, why would you talk about peacocks?
But I don't know. I just thought it was interesting, you know, that the sound effects people, you know, they thought it was important to put there. That, you know, that you got the peacocks are down here at the San Diego Zoo, just walking around, right? You know, they have them up at the racetrack. It's not necessarily, you know, in enclosures or anything. They're just, you know, kind of around. So that's kind of cool. And peacocks are, everybody loves peacocks. There's a scene towards the beginning, and I'm still trying to figure this out too. Ace and his chauffeur, Gus, they get this congratulatory cake from Ace's rivals. And it says, "Wait to go Greek." And it's like, I wonder what this means, right? At first you're looking at it, you're thinking, oh, it should have said "way to go Greek," right?
Yeah.
And in fact, even Nathan says something about it. You know, it's like, oh, it's maybe it's supposed to be "way to go." And Ace is kind of acting like he doesn't know what Nathan's talking about. And, you know, Gus actually has to say, no, I think what he's saying is it's like it was a mistake. There was a transcription mistake. And, you know, the bakery misunderstood what was supposed to be. Anyway, when the scene is done, Gus is pretty convinced that it's not a mistake. And it was meant to say "wait to go Greek." Now, who knows what that means? Is it a threat? You know, it's hard to say. As far as the earthquake goes, so it's kind of interesting. If you live in California, all of California, you've been through some earthquakes. And as a native Californian, it's kind of like, oh, I think that's an earthquake. You know, most earthquakes are like, we had one just a couple weeks ago. My wife was in the kitchen. It's like, "Do you feel that? I think it was an earthquake." "Yeah, I think it was an earthquake." And that's how most of them go. Every once in a while, it's like, "Hey, that's a pretty good earthquake." And then every once in a great while, it's like, "Okay, do I need to make a move here? And the move that you learn living here is, okay, do you go under a table? That's one of them. Or do you go into a door frame because those are more secure, that kind of thing? Or do you run out of the house, you know, which is not necessarily a good idea because, I don't know, telephone poles fall, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting that that was kind of, you'd got a bunch of different reactions. One of the guys from the gang, like, jumped up on the restaurant chair, you know, it's an earthquake. Whereas meanwhile, Escalante, the trainer, he's kind of like, God damn it. You know, it's like just one more thing, right? It really, he doesn't care, right? He's been through these kind of things before. Let's see. I had a couple more notes here. I don't think he gets any credit in the show at all, but the track announcer, you can tell just by his voice, he's Trevor Denman. He's one of the all-time great track announcers. He's South African, American. He does Del Mar. He does Santa Anita. I don't even know if he's retired or not, but they don't give him credit in the show, but that's definitely him. And, you know, we find out at the end that Joe, the veterinarian, is pregnant with Escalante's baby. And, you know, again, we're talking about these storylines that are being introduced right now, and we only have three more episodes to go. So it's probably not going to get resolved. I think those are all kind of the little notes that I had that didn't really have anything to do necessarily with the driving story. So there you go.
Okay. Very good. Well, that wraps episodes 5 and 6. I think we just finished the series. So the next
just
time
do all better... the last three. Yeah. I think that makes sense. There's probably no reason to just have the one at the end. Yeah.
Yep. So we'll finish the series, episodes 7, 8, 9. We'll just do that the next episode. So we can, because as I was pulling episode 5, I was like, where are we in the story? So So we'll wrap this up in the next episode.
You want to do it in the next episode
we'll just
go straight to it. Okay. Yeah. That's
straight
fine.
To it. Yep. Yeah. Okay. And then after that, we'll probably hit a few movies. And then it sounds like, so what are some TV series that you were thinking?
I'm thinking of a couple. There's one called, and availability, that might be an issue. So I don't know. There's one called Lucky that was kind of a comedy about a gambler. I'll have to look at the availability on that. There's one called Tilt. It was on ESPN. I think we mentioned it before. It's a poker show. It was written by the guys who did Rounders. Not all that well received, but, you know, went for at least one season. And, you know, then there are other possibilities like Las Vegas. Now, that was a long-running show, so we wouldn't want to do, like, every episode. Yeah. But maybe we could watch a few or talk about that. Another show called Vegas. Anyway, those are some that I'm thinking of. Lucky might be a good one if it's available, because I seem to remember enjoying it, and it was a comedy. So yeah, maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. We have plenty of, Travel Fanboy is curious if there's a program that maybe searches through all the raw TV data.
There is a program. I have it. It's proprietary. Nobody else knows about it or has access to it. So
you almost never talk about it.
No, right. I'm kind of humble that way. But if there's, you know, if you need me to adjust that program to search through the data for like other things, different things, you know, specifically poker, specifically Vegas.
Welcome, Adam. it's good to see you, buddy. Okay. Well, that's Better Viewing. The next time we do this, it'll only be in the Better Viewing feed. So if you enjoy these episodes and want to continue participating, we'll still stream the recording like we do here on The Better Life, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. But the podcast itself will be only going into the Better Viewing feed. You can find Better Viewing in Apple Podcasts right now. And hopefully by the next time the next episode comes out, it'll finally syndicated. And also I'll have it in Spotify and Stitcher. The manual submission. Mark, always a pleasure, my friend.
Very good. Thank you, Tim.
So, coming back in about a month, we'll do episodes 7, 8, and 9 of Luck. We'll do one podcast episode for those three episodes of Luck to finish out what is available of the Luck series. Again, only one season was put out. Following that, probably do some movies, maybe touch on some other TV shows, but they'll give us an opportunity to be a little more creative and explore maybe some more nuanced shows without the worry that maybe not everybody listening cares to watch those shows. You know, we're now in a place where I think Mark and I can be more creative and explore our enjoyment of TV and movies even more so, still through that gambling lens, but without wondering, oh, is that something, you know, like, can everybody watch that? Is that available for streaming? So I think this is a good move for everybody. Hope those of you that enjoy the Better Viewing episodes will follow us over there. Again, nothing else changes here in the main feed for the Better Life, but that is what's happening moving forward with Better Viewing. BetterMerch.com is where you can cop some merch to support the brand, support the show. The struggle is real. Video poker shirts, tip your dealer shirts in both blue and silver and black, and a number of other things like coffee dice, coffee tumblers, etc. Thank you for everybody who has copped some gear. I see you out there sporting it. A couple of you have told me that wearing your tip your dealer shirt has gotten you a better rating at the table. So there's possibly a little hack for you. But thank you for everybody. Use promo code YO11. YO11, all one word, for 11% off of your purchase. By the way, coming soon, I'm not quite sure when, but I will have a week where I will have standard Canadian shipping. I know I have plenty of Canadian shoppers, and I see Shopify lets me know that people have abandoned their checkouts, and I notice a lot of them are Canadian customers, and I imagine that's likely because shipping to Canada isn't cheap. I will choose a week soon where I will sort of cap the shipping cost and sort of make it easier for some of you to get some of this merch, because I appreciate the support. And I want Canada to be rocking Better merch. So that to come. Patreon.com/TheBetterLife is where you can support the show with a monthly pledge. Appreciate everybody's support there. There's a $9 pledge level that you essentially get a piece of merch every quarter. So we're in the middle of February now. In about a month, I'll be hitting up everybody on that pledge level, being like, hey, what do you want? And I'll let you know. You can look at the store, and if it's available, it's yours. And it can be a shirt, a hoodie, a cup, whatever it may be. Hopefully by then, I will have at least one more piece of merch in there. But this summer, I think we're going to load it up with a few more ideas as well. And not just t-shirts, which is something I'm really excited about. I'm going to put some other things with utility in there, like coffee mugs and stuff. So that way, you're not just, stocking your closet with Better merch stuff. Biloxi. Everybody's like, shut up. Don't care about your promotions and stuff. Tell us about the upcoming Biloxi trip. Plenty of you are asking about it. March 31st to April 4th. That's a Thursday through a Monday. That's when I will be there. Mississippi Rob has been kind enough to sort of put together an agenda that I believe covers Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Sunday, I will be kind of doing my own thing, but I will likely be wandering over to at least Golden Nugget, maybe Hard Rock. My plan on Sunday is to, depending on how the weekend's gambling has gone, to put in a decent amount of play at these properties that I don't really have a relationship with yet, to see if I can trigger an opportunity elsewhere. So that's probably what I'll do for most of Sunday, unless I have some content to create. Always open for the opportunity for more content. But I'm excited to see everybody down there. Again, I get in late afternoon on the 31st. I take off Monday morning, I think, or Monday afternoon. So I will be there for a decent amount of time that weekend. And I'm looking forward to it. Looking forward to seeing everybody. All right, I think that's it. I don't have any other updates. I don't have any other breaking news. Biloxi is just over a month away. It feels like it's closer than it is, but I guess it is technically still about 6 weeks away. I'm looking forward to seeing everybody there. If you're going, let us know. It's not a bit like you're not overcommitting or anything. Like, we don't need, but I think just in general, we want an idea of sort of how many people might be there. Just to get excited about it some more, and to maybe inform maybe other ideas on meetups and stuff like that. But right now, it seems pretty basic on every day there's a meetup at a different property in a different pocket of town, so everybody can see more of Biloxi. I will be at Beau Rivage, as Mark mentioned. He will likely be at Harrah's. I know people are going to be at Gold Nugget. I know people are going to be at IP. So there's going to be, I don't think you're going to be away from someone else going, no matter really where you stay. So unless you're in the RV park at Boomtown, I don't think you're going to be too far from another attendee. So come down to Biloxi, hang out with us. I'm really looking forward to it. That's all I got. We'll come back next week with another episode of The Better Life. On behalf of Mark DeVault, I am Timothy Lawson. Good night and good luck.